How are countries of Central and Eastern Europe coping with their communist legacies? Have their societies done well in the transition to democracy over the last two decades? Why do so many people in this region feel nostalgic towards the totalitarian past? And in what ways is the Czech Republic different from other ex-communist states in the region? These and other issues were the focus of an international conference 20 years after that took place in Prague last week. 20 years after the fall of communism, countries of the former Soviet bloc have democratic political systems, are members of international organizations such as the EU and NATO, and few even have the euro. But their societies are still coping with the aftermath of their totalitarian past, which is proving to be a painful and a much longer process than might have been imagined 20 years ago. The Czech Republic's Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes organized an international conference in Prague last week that looked at these issues. One of the keynote speakers, Czech-born U.S. professor Michael Krause from Middlebury College in Vermont, says countries in the region have had three contrasting experiences.
In this part of the world, Germany did, in terms of what we call transitional justice, conducted most thorough procedures and measures over the last 20 years. And then looking at the rest of the region in Central and East Europe, as well as former Soviet Union, I thought the Czech Republic had done better than the others.
But best does not necessarily mean good, says Prague-based Israeli scholar Aviezer Tucker.
The Czech Republic is probably the most active, but if I say that it is the best, it doesn't mean that it is good. The basic problem is the continuity of elites in a variety of social institutions, including most notably the judiciary, the police, and the academy. That means that when you try to prosecute somebody for crimes that were committed under communism, he will most probably come in front of a former communist judge, be investigated by a former communist policeman, and if you want to produce new judges and new policemen, they have to be educated somewhere, and then they would be educated by the same professors. You put all that together, you discover that actually not much was done. Even though more was done here than anywhere else, and more in the level of statements, like criminalizing the communist regime, whatever that means, rather than actually doing something about it.
The issue of the elites remaining at the top is one of the major criticisms of the newly emerged democracies, including the Czech Republic. People who had access to information and good contacts from the communist era have gained very influential positions in the world of business and politics. The latter is the area of expertise of Tetyana Kostchenko from Ukraine's National University of Kyiv Mohyla Academy.
I was focusing on those elite members in the current Ukrainian political elite who had some Komsomol or Communist Party experience and actively participated in these organizations in the past, before 1991. So it's they were in power before. They were in power actually in the beginning of this decade, and they managed to keep their positions afterwards, after the Orange Revolution.
One problem is how the individual countries have dealt with their communist past legally and formally, and quite another is how people see their past today. Paulina Bren, who is a professor at Vassar College in the United States, is an expert on Czechoslovak television in the era known as normalization, that is, the 1970s and early 1980s. She says she was surprised how popular all those TV series from that time still are.
As I've watched these DVDs become available and the way that they have been, as I said in my talk, accepted as part of the national culture, not something to be critiqued or debated at all, it's interesting because when I first started research, and I was doing research in the Central Committee archives and then in the Czech television archives, and I started reading about Dietl and these serials, and I wanted to see them. And at that time, they were only on sort of 8mm film. And so they're able to show me a few of them in sort of a darkened room and a projector, and they showed me some of them. So it was interesting to then, as I was finishing up a big part of the research, to see them start to be rebroadcast on television.
Ms. Brent says the popularity of these works shows that there has been a total lack of any serious debate about the past.
Gradually, as I sort of come back to do conferences and so forth, I suddenly see these DVDs that I could not even access when I started my research, now available absolutely everywhere for anybody to look at. And so that's been a very interesting development, and it speaks a lot to just the absence of any real discussion in this country about late communism, and I think it's a problem. I really do, on many levels and for all generations.
The phenomenon of nostalgia for all things communist has, of course, been most noticeable in Germany, where they coined a special term for it, nostalgia. But the issue exists in all of the former communist countries, albeit to varying degrees. Hungary's Lena Pelandini-Simani is a research student at the London School of Economics and Political Science.
There is a strong sense of nostalgia in certain parts of the society. I wouldn't talk about the general nostalgia, but you have to keep in mind that during socialism, the majority of the people worked, and in capitalism, many people lost their job, their sense of security, and these people see socialism as an era of security.
Right after the fall of communism 20 years ago, the most optimistic forecasts predicted that countries like Czechoslovakia, Hungary and Poland would catch up with the developed and stabilized Western democracies in just a few years. Two decades later, the outlook is bleaker, and it seems that the former Soviet satellites might always be different. Paulina Bren again.
I do remember perfectly all those hopes in the early 90s about sort of, it's going to look like Austria 20 years from now. And, you know, maybe it does look like Austria. What I find very disturbing, though, is sort of the way people act with one another, the way political culture is, I suppose, corrupt is really the word I want to use. And while these problems don't exist elsewhere, they seem to exist here with a greater intensity. And I do find myself wondering whether this is simply the way it's going to be. So I wish I could give a positive spin on it, but I'm not the one to ask.
On the other hand, Professor Michael Kraus believes that the term post-communist no longer applies to the societies of Central and Eastern Europe, and each problem, such as corruption, should be addressed as such, and especially because they are not unique to the region. The societies should therefore be more open and look for inspiration elsewhere. But are they?
Well, not as open as I would wish, as I would think would be desirable. So, for example, if you take the European Union, my own view is that for reasons of history, Czech Republic really has no alternative and should not be the country that will hold up the Lisbon Treaty. That would be absurd, and I think that, it's kind of a real pickle that the Czech Republic got itself into. But it doesn't reflect really the majority opinion in the society. It doesn't reflect even the majority opinion in the political elite. It all hangs in the balance on account of one man who occupies the castle. So that's not really the way it should be.